Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast supported by Misspent Summers, and I'm going to be providing you with the most in-depth content from the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking. Misspent Summers are the team behind the awesome Hurdy Burdy Downhill Yearbook and the World Stage Book, which covers the Enduro World Series. The 2019 editions of both of these books are out now, so you can get yourself a copy from misspentsummers.com. I've read both and they're packed with amazing photography, race reviews and super interesting articles from some of the world's top mountain bike media. The team tell me that they've got some exciting new projects coming up in January 2020, so keep your eyes on misspentsummers.com early next year to see what they're up to. If you want to be in with a chance of winning a copy of the latest Hurdy Burdy and World Stage books for you and a friend, then all you need to do is to head to @HurdyBurdyBook on Instagram, find the post for this episode and tag your friend in the comments. The Misspent Summers crew will then pick one of you as a lucky winner and send out the books. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to help keep it going into 2020 and beyond, then there's a few ways that you can help. You can tell your friends about the podcast and get as many people listening as possible. You can share the episodes on your social media, or you can head to downtimepodcast.com/shop and either grab yourself some of our merchandise or click on share the love to make a financial contribution of your choosing, and that will help keep the podcast going and getting better and better. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you get every episode delivered to your device as soon as it drops. Just head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and you'll find all the links that you need. On that same page, there's a form to join our newsletter. We're not going to send you loads of emails or share your details with anyone, but you will get our weekend warm-up email every Friday with some interesting bike-related stuff to look at and get stoked for the weekend on the trails. Once you fill out the form, you'll get an email that you need to open and confirm your subscription, so don't forget to check your junk mail for that. All right, this week I'm joined by Bernard Kerr. As you may well know, Bernard has taken on a crazy project this off-season to race Supercross Anaheim 1, so clearly we had to talk about that. We also get into his career history and how he's gone about building the pivot team from scratch to become one of the most popular teams on the World Cup circuit. Bernard's got a great approach to life, and I really enjoyed spending some time finding out more about him. So, without further ado, here's Bernard Kerr. Bernard Kerr, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. I hope to be on it.
Nice one. Good stuff. Yeah, thanks for welcoming me into your humble abode.
Yeah.
And a little tour of the place. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool spot, pretty out the way. And yeah, it's good to have the team here and stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's a bit dirty right now, actually.
Bunk room for the crew out the
back.
Yeah,
bunk room for the crew. I actually had quite a few people here recently, and I'm looking across the floor now. When people come, I guess you look and you don't normally, and it's pretty dirty.
It's all good. It's a rider's house. That's how it works, isn't it? Well, we're obviously going to talk about mountain biking, but you've got a pretty cool bet/mad project on the go that we've just been having a look at bits from. And I want to talk about that first. So you've somehow landed yourself in an attempt to ride Anaheim 1 and start next year. First off, for people that kind of don't know much about the Supercross world, just give us like a bit of background on what Anaheim 1 means. What is it?
Well, I guess so. The Supercross World Series, I guess it's like World Cup mountain biking. They have a Supercross World Series. It starts in January. And normally, or I'm pretty sure most of the time now, the first one is in Anaheim, California, in Los Angeles. That's always the first one. And it's on the first weekend of January. And yet, it's the first round of a 17 round series, I think, of Supercross, which is indoor stadium racing on motocross bikes.
And it's full on.
Yeah, it's full on. Yeah, it's full on. Yeah. After starting to try and learn how to ride a track, yeah, it's pretty full on.
Cool. And like, wind the clock back. How did that bet happen? Like,
so what was it? 3 years ago now, maybe in Queenstown. I live just down the hill from Eddie and all the Vanzacs and everyone. Like, and I drive my motocross bike up there every other day, like in the morning, up to their house. And I don't know. I rode a lot of motocross that summer. I brought a new Cowie that summer out in New Zealand, and I think most mountain bikers, as well as myself, think Supercross and motocross is way cooler than what we do. And it's so rad, and we look up to those guys so much. And I guess it's always been a childhood dream. And even more recently, like, I've got into watching Supercross more and motocross, and the guys do whips. And it's always been a dream, like, whoa, imagine if you could race one of those. And I think we were joking. I was like, dude, I'd love to race one of those. I was saying to Eddie or his old mechanic, Daniel Maylink, or Dave McMillan, or someone. We were all talking, having a few beers for you and out of thing. I was like, yeah, I would love to do one of those one day. I would love to try and do one. Try is the main word here. And I think they said, put your money where your mouth is. And there's a video online they put out if you find it. And I was like, all right, I'll either spend $5,000 on one night out in Queenstown or anywhere.
Yeah.
or I will try and do A1 by 2020. And 3 years later, I'm trying to do 2020. And earlier this year, we put another bet on with Hervé Orny at 100%. And he has a $5,000 bet on with him to make the night show now. Because my initial bet was just to turn it up.
Okay.
To be at Anaheim 1 by 2020. And his one is to make the night show. So yeah.
And that is that top 40?
Top 40. Yeah. So yeah, it's like time practice or whatever. And you just have to make it one lap that's in a top 40 time.
Okay.
And I think last year, 58 people, 57 people turned up. So.
Yeah. So yeah, so the early stages is literally you're kind of out on your own against the clock. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you get one, 10 minute like practice.
Yeah.
And then you get 2 10-minute qualifying sessions.
Okay.
And you just have to set a time in the top 40.
Yeah.
And but, that's it.
So that's the, obviously you've got the danger of the track and the, you know, the scale of it and the magnitude, but you're not head-to-head racing at that point.
You're not head-to-head racing. No, all I really want to do is do one good lap and then hopefully roll out into the night show. But
and then you're into the motors, like into
head-to-head. Yeah, you get head-to-head racing. If you do that, you get heat racing and an LCQ guaranteed, but... I mean, it's a big feat to try and even like get around the track, let alone try and qualify. But I always thought, I don't know, may as well, I'd rather fail trying to do something than not try it at all. If I wake up and I'm 50, I'm like, wow, I really wish I did that, you know, or whatever. I may as well, yeah, I'm trying to do it. And if I fail, I fail. What's the worst going to happen? I don't do it.
Yeah, no, fair so, play.
Yeah.
So you've made the decision, right? I'm going to go do this. Talk us through, like, where do you start?
luckily for me in mountain biking that we've got some really good sponsors with Renthal, Fly, and just a bunch of them really. I guess Fly's probably been the most helpful one, and Maxxis so far. They know a lot of people and they can put me in contact or give me advice or help with parts, or Fly do the best like motocross gear out there these days. So gear is not a problem. So I started there, talked to them, and then I've got a friend in the UK called Jordan Booker that rides mountain bikes, and he used to race motocross and he's really good. A lot better than me. He could turn up tomorrow and race the night show. So I guess, yeah, reached out to him and he had a supercross track in Bristol, arena cross kind of style track. And we hired a digger in there a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and made it a full supercross track. So started with building ourselves a track.
Yeah, good start. Good place to start. And then how hard is it to get an entry for something like that? Can anyone turn up? Like what's the criteria?
I'm pretty sure, dude. It's actually insane. Like if you're in the States, you either have to go through arena cross and get how many points to qualify for supercross, or they have a thing now called SX Futures where you get points for these mini supercross races that are normally the day after supercross, and they're a bit like tame the track down and you go through that way. But if you're an international rider, you can literally just buy a license in your country, an FIM license, get an AMA release, pay for that, the ACU or whatever country you're from should sign off as long as you pass a medical, send it over to them, and if they think you're competent, they enter you for the race. As far as I can make out, and as far as every rule book I've checked and everyone I've spoke to at the AMA or the ACU has said, is that's what I got to do. And unfortunately, you can't really enter until the end of November, beginning of December, because the FIM doesn't put out the prices for their licenses.
Okay.
But I've done as much as I can do, apart from the medical, which I'll do in the next 2 days, until the FIM put, which is like the UCI of motocross.
Okay.
Put the license fees out. As soon as they've done that, I'm, as far as I can tell, pretty much good to go. So you could enter it theoretically. Anyone could.
Fair play.
If you're international, which seems crazy, but I guess it's hard to get people in otherwise.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. So how do you rate your supercross abilities at this point in time?
At this point, I've done 3 days. I did one day, I did, I guess, an hour on my 500 while I waited for the suspension for the 450. And then I did about an hour on my own on the 450 on the track. And I've done 2 days with Jordan there at his track, because having him there is a huge help. Like he knows how to hit a triple. He had a couple friends there actually that knew how, like, raced supercross in America. And it's so much help having them there and like watching them hit a jump before I hit it. Like, honestly, I knew it was going to be hard, but maybe I didn't think it was going to be this scary. Like, I've done 3 days now on a track and I've got around the whole track. I've been through a set of whoops. I've hit a triple. I've hit a finish line jump. So I've done the whole track, definitely not well, but I have done it. So I would not rate my abilities high right now. I'd give myself a 1.5 out of 10. But yeah, I can jump fine. It's honestly just the whoops and the rhythm straights, like dialing those in. So right now in the whoops, I've done 1 day because the first 2 days they weren't ready and I suck. Like right. I think I went through them 70 times and my shoulders felt like they were going to fall off by the end. I was so tired and I'm really, really bad at that. So we've got, what day are we today? I don't even know. We're at the beginning of November.
Yeah, like 6th of November.
So I've got 2 months to go. So I don't know. If I can improve as much as I did on the first day of Whoops, we should be okay. But okay. They are really scary and really hard.
Yeah, Supercross Whoops are like...
Dude, they're full on. When you come round into them, there's like a, we've got a set-up double before them. You click up to third in the air. And it's these like mini walls. And honestly, I don't even... You just have to like be real far forward and like be on the balls of your feet and not be scared. But if you're scared, you suck. But you suck because you're scared. It's so weird. And like, I honestly have no excuse. Jordan jumped on my bike, went around the track, hit everything first lap and went through the Whoops. Absolutely perfect. So yeah, I just need to like, it is manning up. But you got to be sensible with it and build up. So
yeah. What's the technique? Is it, are you just like going in kind of hard and getting some
And it honestly is. It's like balls of your feet, chin over the handlebars, like butt out. And just real central way. And you just got to have the timing of them down, I think. Because it's like front wheel hits one, back wheel hits that one, front wheel hits an inch. Yeah. Like you'll see the bike kind of pitch like all the way through over the tops. But I don't know. Those guys are so good, dude. Like already I guess I knew I was taking something on, but I never thought of it as learning a whole new thing.
Yeah.
We're pretty like lucky, I guess. You start mountain biking or whatever you're good at a young age. You grow up, you do it. And you're just doing it. Like, it's fun. I guess you're learning new things, but you don't really realize. I've never set out to learn something, or especially as an older person, like I am, even after the age of 20, I've never set out to be like, right, I'm going to learn this, like a completely new thing. And it's it's a very humbling experience.
Yeah, it must be
to
quite.
To learn something.
Yeah, like refreshing as well, though. It's
super,
nice.
Super, yeah, like to learn, like, okay, this is what you do, and oh, you need a bigger sprocket, and you need this, or all the things. Like, the first day I hit the triple was like, I've never had a feeling like that, I don't think, hitting a jump, ever. Like, on a mountain bike, I can kind of judge it. Even at hardline, the first time we do a big jump, it's scary, it's cool, you do it, and it's rad.
Yeah.
But when I hit that triple, honestly, I can't even tell you the feeling. It was insane. Like, it threw me so high, and I lap rounded it 8 times in a row just so I could, like, do it. But, yeah, I can't say I've ever had a feeling hitting a mountain bike jump like that, or even another mountain bike jump. It's been... So far, the 3 days that I've ridden the track that it hasn't rained has been awesome. Yeah, really, really fun experience.
But you're on that steep part of the learning curve as well, aren't you, when you're kind of relatively new to something, so you see the progress.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, the progress probably will slow down a bit. But yeah, it's awesome. Like, yeah, learning like, right, today we're going to do the double and the finish line jump. That's day one. Next day was pretty much everything. And then the next day was Whoops. So yeah, it's really cool to like, have goals, and Jordan's trying to set like, right, we're going to work on the rhythm straight one day. Like, let's not get you trying to do full laps and pieces to get, that's too hard. Let's just do right rhythm straight today. And then do like a few play on like the bits you can do, refresh, keep yourself like fresh.
Yeah.
And it's cool to have someone that's like pumped on it. And yeah.
Nice. And any, are you looking to do any kind of changes in the gym or any of that sort of things? Or are you so focused on time on the bike?
I guess just, yeah, bike time really. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to train. I've been real busy with trying to run this mountain bike team that I actually run as well and keep riding mountain bikes because obviously we love that, but it's such good training. So yeah, just trying to ride mountain bikes still is like normal, like four days a week, 5 days a week, and then trying to gym 3 days a week. But I think the gym time will probably come down a bit maybe to like two-ish days a week, maybe two or three. I don't really know when we get out to California. At the minute, I can still gym 3-4 days a week because it's so wet here in the UK, but...
Yeah,
maybe that will come down. Yeah, I haven't ridden Supercross now for a week again. I think it's real frustrating, if I'm honest.
Fair play. And are you going to go out to California well ahead of time? Or?
Yeah, so we're going to try and get 4 more weeks in here, including this week, and try and go to California latest by December 1st.
Okay.
So yeah, pretty soon.
Nice. And have you got access to somewhere good to ride when you're there?
I think so. Again, super lucky with Maxxis. They sponsor Jeremy McGrath, the best Supercross rider of all time. And we're in talks with, I guess, Maxxis, and they're trying to link me up with him and his manager and get me out to some of the tracks he knows. And then there is 2 public ones, but I've heard one shutting down. There's one in Hemet and one at, what's it called? I know, it's Milestone.
Okay.
So there's 2 public tracks I can ride, but hopefully between Fly and Maxxis, maybe I can ride some cool private ones. But
sweet. Yeah, because a lot of the riders have got like their own compounds.
Yeah, and... own compounds, or like Cowie have a test track, Pro Circuit have a test track, like Yamaha, everyone has their own test track. So I don't know if I want to go out with those boys. I'd be pretty terrified and they'll be going way too fast because I'm not trying to compete. That's what I want people to know. I'm trying to do something and I'm just trying and I'm not trying to be up there. Those guys are so good. They've been doing it for so long. The guys that win qualifying, I think I need to be about 8 seconds slower a lap than the fastest time.
Okay.
Which is quite a lot slower.
What's the kind of average lap
time? I think
time?
They do like a 51-ish at Anaheim okay. normally, around like a low 50s, and yeah. the guy on 40th like a 58 or whatever. Okay.
Yeah, so you can get under a minute.
Yeah, so I just need to be there. I'm not trying to compete with anyone or do anything like that or claim anything there. So I'm just trying to have fun. And yeah, like I said, it's been awesome so far. I've got such a cool motorbike here already with like what WPS and Fly have helped me with, and Maxis and Decor and all these people that they know have helped me with the graphics and everything. It's
yeah.
rad.
Cool. Yeah. What changes have you made to the bike then?
Supercross suspension. That was a guy called Technical Solutions that Jordan knows in Bristol. He's been rad. He did the suspension. I've got a Recluse clutch in it because I was told by McGrath you needed a better clutch. So I spoke to Doug at Fly and he got me a better clutch. And then it's got a 52 tooth sprocket on the rear instead of a stock 50.
Yeah.
McGrath's advice as well. And you listen to the king apparently.
For so sure.
did that. And then pegs. It's got different Fly pegs I really like. The normal Renthal bars. I run a 996 bend. The Villopoto Stewart because I think they're real good riders and it sounds cool.
Yeah, it does.
And, what else have we got? Pro Circuit clamps. They've been awesome, actually. Yeah. There's a guy called Jared Coles at Fly. He knew someone down at Pro Circuit and they've hooked me up with a pipe and given me a really good deal on some triple clamps. So that's yeah. been unreal, dude. Like the support we've already got. And then a guy that owns the company Decor Visuals. I played golf with him earlier this year at San Diego Supercross with the guys at Fly. So it honestly, I can't thank everyone enough already just like for what's happened so far. And yeah, all the help's been
yeah, it's amazing.
Ridiculous.
Everyone loves a good project. Like,
yeah, I guess it's a fun project. Like, yeah, what's the worst we can do is fail. Like, yeah. May as well try it. It's like something I'm going to put a lot of effort into. So
yeah,
yeah, it's rad.
And it'd be a buzz as well. Like the crowd's going to be
it'll
pretty
be rad.
Big,
and yeah, the crowd will be unreal. And 50,000 people. Like if we do make the night show, and then a lot of the mountain bikers, I'm going to hold them to it. Like Loic Bruni and Finn Isles and Brooke and a lot of people and Rob Warner have said if I make it or if I'm going to do it. They said they'll come and Greg Minar and loads of people. So I'm sure some of them will back out. I'm going to call them out now. A lot of people have said, if I'm actually going to do it, because a lot of people don't think believe me that I was actually going to try this, they said they'd come. So I know Eddie Masters and Van Zaks and Matt Walker and everyone will be out there, but hopefully we get a huge crew of us out there.
Mate, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, wicked. Yeah, such a cool project.
Yeah, cool
look
project,
forward to seeing how it goes.
Scary. I just want to get a few more days on the Supercross track and I'll be a bit more confident.
You'll be all good. A few weeks in California on some big tracks. And
that's it. Hopefully, I've done 3 days and I can get around the whole track pretty like confidently. So
yeah,
2 more months, we'll be all right.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah,
nice one. How do you think it like impact on your mountain biking then, like looking into the 2020 season? Do you think it's going to be beneficial? Do you think it's detrimental? Like, how do you feel about that?
I think it's really cool. I've started training earlier than usual, obviously, because I wouldn't have started training really that hard for mountain biking yet. And I think you see the top guys in motocross and supercross, they're so fit. And I'm going to put everything into it. Like a lot of brands, like I said, have already helped me out and are being so nice. Like I want to put my full effort into it and get really fit and do a good training camp. And especially in California, it's warm and dry. It's not like in the UK, you can go out for a ride and we are training here, but it's hard some days. If you're riding 5-6 days a week and it's raining every day, it can be hard to motivate yourself, but there is a different, cool, new motivation. And yeah, in the warm and dry, it should be pretty easy to get motivated. So
yeah, so maybe come into the season fitter.
I think fitter, hopefully, yeah. I'll probably go straight from there to New Zealand to go ride with Eddie and everyone and train in Queenstown again, and go straight from Queenstown to Rotorua, back here a week off, get the truck and the team ready, and then first World Cup. So if all goes well, touch wood, hopefully going really fit and like, don't know, feeling good, hopefully.
Nice, look forward to it. So before you got into bikes, you were, was it horses and a bit of ice hockey?
Horses and ice hockey, yeah. Yeah, ages ago, yeah.
That's a kind of random mixture for a start.
Yeah, we rode horses. My mum and sister still do. And like when we were younger, we used to go all the time. My brother actually won the Shetland Grand National years ago, which is pretty funny.
Fair
There's
play.
A trophy somewhere here for that, I think, as well. And I used to do horses all the time. And yeah, loved it. And then, yeah, ice hockey, did that till I was like 11 or something. We were national champions in that, me and my brother actually, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
And then, yeah, got into biking with my cousin at the age of like 11 or 12, maybe.
Yeah. So competitive family, like, is
it? Yeah, like
pretty...
we always had like, it was like pick one sport, you're allowed to do a sport. And it was never even a question, do you compete? You just did.
Right.
You did a sport and you're like, right, where's a race? Like when I started mountain biking, I was like, right, I'm going to do biking. 3 weeks later, I think I went and did a race. It wasn't, like we were forced to. It was just like, okay, where is the rate? It was just, you assumed you were going to compete.
Yeah. What, and so what is it that you kind of loved about mountain biking that first time? You say you rode with your cousin.
Yeah, I guess we always used to do wheelies. We did ride motorbikes when we were younger, like 4, 5, 6. And I think I had one again when I was like 10, maybe for a year. I'm not sure. Maybe not a year. Anyway, yeah. And we would always, even if we weren't riding motorbikes or horses, I'd ride around on like a shitty bike and just do wheelies. Like, loved them. Like BMX or whatever. We got BMXs for Christmas when we were 8 or 10, maybe. Had those for a couple of years or whatever. Just, don't know, kids, like, we all just used to be outdoors, right? Especially if you lived in like a neighborhood. It was just like, you go to the skate park or like just go out and do a wheelie for 3 hours, you know? Like, it's crazy. You would literally go on the road and do a wheelie for 3 hours with your mates. And I remember being like, oh, how many pedals can you do? How many rotations of the pedals could you do? And I was like, oh, I can do a 9-pedal wheelie or whatever. So, yeah, just loved that. And then, yeah, was it after ice hockey? Yeah, I just wanted to do more jumps because we didn't really have jumps in ice hockey. And then, yeah, I got a bike, I guess, and my cousin did it.
And it stuck.
Yeah, I guess it stuck. Yeah, I did pretty good at it. So, yeah, it stuck.
And I get the impression that your mum was quite a big part of, like, dragging you around to race. She used to marshal, didn't she? So you got free entries.
Yeah, so my parents split up when I was maybe 14.
Okay.
So about 14, I think. And even before that, she just, like, coming in the more, I think, because my dad would take my other brother motorbike racing, like, road. And after they split up, like, I didn't... There was never a point where I was like, should I live with mum, should I live with dad? I just stayed in the house we were in after my dad lived with my mum. Just happened to. So she just kept taking me to races. And yeah, we couldn't really afford to race because of like the whole divorce thing or whatever. Right. I don't even know. We had literally no money. The house got repossessed. It was gnarly. Like, Whoa. Yeah, I had to move in with my grandparents for a bit. So like to afford racing, she had to marshal.
Yeah.
Which was pretty rad. So she would like do that and then... She's quite driven, I guess. So she was really good at marshalling. So then she was like the head marshal. So she could get paid to marshal and get a free entry, which was rad. So we figured that was better. So yeah, she was like foot on the race. I probably better even saw her at a lot of the races, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was like head marshal for the Nationals. I literally didn't see her at a lot of them, but that's how we made it work. So yeah, she would drive to all the races, marshal all weekend, drive home and then go to work the next day. So... Yeah, it was pretty rad, really, I guess. I was really lucky. Like, I still saw my brothers and sisters, but they all moved in with my dad to start with. So we were so lucky, me and my mum, in a way, that we had, I don't know if it was 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, where it was kind of just me and her.
Okay.
So she had a lot of time almost to take me out. Or be like, where do you need to go? What do you need to do? Or,
cool.
Let's go to another race. So, yeah, we got pretty lucky in a way that we had a lot of time to get good at biking for a while between us.
Yeah, so she must have, she's a big part of that kind of success, I guess, to help you.
Yeah, definitely that. And then, bought me a van. When I passed my test, like, so nice, bought me a brand new van so I could then get to all the races because my brothers and sisters were back in the picture again.
Yeah.
She couldn't take me everywhere, so I could get to all the races on my own in the van. And then even, like, she'd help me find people. Like, Danny Hart's sister drove me to a World Cup once because she wanted to watch Danny. I wasn't young enough to drive in the continent, so she drove my van and, like, we'd always work out a way to, make it work. It was pretty rad.
Nice. Yeah, and you were clearly kind of doing things on a budget in the early days. You ended up pitting out of a caravan.
Yeah, definitely. There was a load of crazy stories, actually. Like, I had two bikes stolen when it was just me and my mum after my parents split up. Because when we were the parents together, we had a little bit of money. I had two bikes. I think I had a Trek hardtail and a Kona Full Sus. They got stolen off the back of my mum's car. And then she ran a party shop at the time. This is a good story, hopefully. They got stolen. We didn't know what to do and we couldn't really afford a new bike. And my mum's been into horses, like you said, our whole life. And she's real good friends with a farrier, a local farrier around here called Jerry. And I don't know how she came up with the idea, if I'm honest, but she was like, right, if we bet on this horse, like, I'll use money from the shop. It was my grandma's party shop at the time. I'll take money, like, out the till or whatever from this week. And it was like, right, if we bet on the horse, we can win. We can afford a new bike, like, still a secondhand bike. If we lose, we just have to eat baked beans and toast for a month. Like, are you happy with that? She was like, I don't want to like make you eat bad food for a month. But she was like, I'd have to put the money back in the till out of my money if we lose. So like, yeah, you're eating real shit food for a month if we lose. But if we win, you can get a bike. And we won on that horse, which was so cool. So like the horse won and we won enough money, I think like 800 quid or whatever it was, to buy, we bought a secondhand DMR, which was real rad, like just a hardtail with forks. And then that broke after a while, and DMR was so cool. Secondhand bike, they honored a warranty on it.
Fair play.
Which was so cool of them because, for sure, you shouldn't have got a warranty on it.
Yeah.
And then, that was like the start, I guess, of doing things on a budget. And then, after, like, mum was real good with that, like working out ways to make things work, I guess. And when I was on a team with Fionn Griffiths, which was cool, and then that shut down. So I had to do my own thing when I first signed with Pivot. which is about to be 10 years ago now. Bad. In the UK, they gave me like a frame and a little bit of money. And I was like, right, how am I going to make it work to do a full season? And I thought, why don't I just get a caravan behind a van? I've got this van my mum's bought me. It's like such a sick van she's got me. I've had it for how many years now? I was like, I'll just tow a caravan. So I bought like a 350-pound caravan off of Gumtree or something. And yeah, towed it all around to the Nationals, all around Europe. But it was dialed. Like, you could fully live in it and race out of it, like, yeah, really well. So, no, the caravan was sick. That was first year on Pivot. And that thing was funny, man. We had some good times in that. Like, Ollie brought that up the other day, actually. But, yeah, we've come a long way from a 350-pound caravan.
Yeah, big difference to the setup you got these days. Yeah, but, for sure.
It all helps. Like, makes you what you are now, I guess.
Yeah. And you've worked some different jobs as well, I guess, to kind of supplement the racing, yeah, side of things. You worked in the fancy dress in the party shop.
Yeah, I worked in the party shop a lot. Like, yeah, behind the till with mum. Like, she was really good, I guess. Yeah, gave me a job there, guarding my granddad's. I was a builder for one of Ollie's friends called Jake. And then I was a rickshaw rider in London as well for one winter, actually, which was real cool. I remember, yeah, you had to rent the bike for £40 a week and you could turn up as much as you want or as little as you want. So, yeah, you just rent it for £40 a week and whatever you made was yours. So yeah, you could go 7 days a week if you wanted or 2 days a week. So
cool.
It was pretty cool. I used to live in Guildford. It was about an hour up. And I'd either go up like after six because of congestion charge and just come back at midnight or whatever. Or
yeah,
I worked out congestion charging cameras only used to be forward facing. So you could take off your front number plate and you could go home before six.
Nice.
So that was pretty good. But that was a job that paid real well. I could ride all day or ever go for a ride in the morning, go dirt jumping, whatever.
Yeah.
Go up there in the evening and you could make £70 in 3 or 4 hours if you were good, because there wasn't many of us that were English. So it made my life pretty easy.
Yeah.
So that was a really cool job one winter, actually, yeah.
Well, and it's a bit of training as well.
Yeah, you're like training out there. You had clips on the bike, which was cool. So you'd get fit and then like hang out. Like, London's cool. Like, I was young, I don't know what, I was like 20 or whatever. So yeah, kind of in a busy, vibrant, cool place, like hanging out. Yeah, riding a bike around, meet some people. It was cool.
Yeah, you must have had some interesting drunk people in the back of your
ritual.
Yeah,
some crazy drunk people. I had to make one guy get off once in like Mayfair. He's like a fat businessman, but that was it. And then one guy, like an old Spanish guy, tried to pay me to go to his hotel room with him. So that was pretty weird, but...
Bit odd.
Yeah, bit odd. But most of it was pretty rad. It was a cool job to have, for sure.
Yeah, fair play. And so do you remember your first ever World Cup?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that real well, actually, first ever World Cup. Yeah, Maribor.
2008?
2008 Maribor, yeah. Me and my mum. Who else went? My cousin. Me and my mum, my cousin. Clueless when you think about it. Just hyped to go and pumped on it. Yeah, funny. 2008, I was on a Milliard bike.
Yeah, single-sided swing arm.
Yeah, single-sided swing arm. Milliard for that and Identity for a hardtail, because I tried to race four cross and downhill.
Is that? I read some of that. It was because you thought you had to do both.
I just thought that's what you did. Honestly, yeah, like, me and my mum thought you just did both. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, you're going to World Cup, you do both. Not like you had to by rules, but you just, like, if you wanted to be a good rider or a pro, like, you had to do both, you know?
And whatever, a lot of the top guys did
that. Dude, they all used to. It was rad. Yeah, like Steve and Greg, everyone used to it. And you'd watch videos, so... Yeah, it was rad. It was a big jump at the bottom of the four cross that I remember real scared about. Huge overshoot. Absolutely crashed my brains out, which was pretty gnarly. But I think I had body armor on, which was real good. My mum would decide I needed to buy some the day before or that day, and then had a huge crash in it. So it was good that we bought it, but I feel like I cracked a rib. And then downhill, dude, honestly, we probably had 90 PSI in my tires. I don't even know. Like, we didn't know what suspension clickers were. Like, we didn't set it up, but really... Didn't know the hardtail. So the hardtail, did I qualify for the four cross? Did I not race? I can't even remember in the four cross, if I'm honest. I think maybe I qualified and went out first round. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But in the downhill, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if you got it now. I think I came 88th.
Okay.
Which, what, 88th or 84th? 88th, I think I came. And Danny got, because he was a first year as well, got 74th or 76th, I'm pretty sure. So I just missed it. But I was gutted, but I wasn't really. I remember thinking Sam Dale got wherever it was the year before at Vigo and it rained, like, real good in his first World Cup, and I wanted to be as good as Sam Dale. But I didn't. But Danny had only just made the cut and he was so good, so I wasn't that gutted. But yeah, first World Cup in Maribor.
Full on. Yeah, quite a deep end experience.
Yeah.
Getting into that kind of stuff, I guess.
Definitely, yeah.
But did it take, it you, cool. take you a while to kind of suss it out, to work it out?
Yeah, I didn't qualify the whole first year. I'm trying to think where the next one...
It was a Fort William.
Yeah, probably a terrible day. I never really liked Fort William. And then, yeah, next year at Andorra was the first time I qualified. 66th, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
On flat pedals in Andorra on a Sunday. Like, we'd had a problem with the Milliard bike. So I had my brother's Iron Horse Sunday with me because we were worried I had no spares for the Milliard. So my brother used to ride as well, my older brother a bit. So I had his Sunday. I was like, right, I'm going to ride that. I remember racing in flat pedals, like the worst shoes because I thought they were cool. They were Duffs. So I was like, these look sick. I'll race in these. Whatever. And qualified 66th, which was so like rad. I think I either came 66th in the race, did better or what. I can't remember. And then like a week later, maybe, or 2 weeks later, Maribor. And I qualified 13th.
That's insane.
Like, which was on like plate 165 or something. I think I qualified 13th. And honestly, dude, again, no idea. Bike wasn't set up. Like, don't even know if I was on a good run at the time. I probably just came down and thought I was going to come, maybe qualify or not. But like, yeah, you do well the week before. You're confident, you're hyped, and you go there. And yeah, I qualified 13th. And remember, like, before the finals, it was drying out because it was like wet. We were on spikes when I qualified. I was like, do I keep my cut spikes on? Do I put other tires on? And again, big budget, like tires were all used. So it was either like put a worn high roller on or keep wet screams on. And I remember I went to the high rollers and crashed in finals. I was so gutted. And I still think I came like 34th maybe.
Yeah. Setting off behind Fabian Barella.
Yeah, I remember being at the start. It was behind Fabian. And I think Greg was after me from memory. And I was in a GB jersey because I still didn't have enough points. And yeah, I was between those two, I'm pretty sure, at the start. And I had no trainer, no one up there, nothing. I remember not even knowing. And I think I was like laughing. I was like, ah, this is so cool. Like,
that must have felt insane to be like in with those people that you've looked up to. And like,
I guess like, I knew Fabian Barella, but not like Craig. I wasn't ever a huge mountain bike fan. I just loved riding.
Okay.
I didn't like watch a million videos and that stuff.
Right.
Like I knew Greg and Steve, maybe Steve more than anyone. But really, I was just hyped on like riding and I probably thought it was funny. I probably should have been more nervous. Maybe I'd have taken it more seriously and done better. But yeah, it was rad. Yeah, it was pretty cool to do that. And then win European champs like a week after that, maybe, which was rad on the Sunday.
So. Got a bit of a roll.
When you get on a wave, you get on a wave, dude. Like, you see it with Eddie Masters, you see it with Bruni, Danny, Laurie, anyone. You're on a wave, you ride that wave.
Yeah, that confidence just kind of builds. Dude, it just goes. Eh?
Yeah, it's rad.
Yeah, it's amazing. So how did the pivot thing come about then?
So that was actually fully down to Ollie Wilkins. I've got to give him credit for that massively. Okay. I owe him to this day for that, if I'm honest. So yeah, I was on Norco and that ended with Theon. And then, geez, dude, it was late. I was just idiot. I didn't really know. Like, I was like, oh, that's ended. Like, I'll try and look for something. And me and Martin Whiteley were trying to look for something, my manager at the time. And Ollie was like, oh, upgrade DMR. I'm going to do this new brand called Pivot if you want. And honestly, I wasn't really interested because I thought it was the company called Last. And I thought, they'd done Last Bikes before, and I thought it was just like Last had been renamed or it was another thing like that, and I never heard of it. And I was like, oh, whatever. I kind of just dismissed it. And after, he's like, no, I'll talk DMR if you want. I was like, yeah, sure. And then I was like, dude, oh, they look rad for sure. It's like an Iron Horse Sunday. It's got a DW link. And I was like, dude, that's so rad. I got nothing for sure. Like, what else can they help out with?
Yeah.
Went in, like, kind of decided we're going to do it. Went in on my birthday. What birthday was it then? I don't know, 20th birthday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I went in on my birthday to pick up my first frame. Like, Ollie, like, put me in contact with, like, yeah, Matt and Damo down there. Matt Ryan, Damien, which was cool. And then Tom Varcaro at the time was the pivot guy. And, yeah, we, like, went in, got, like, I borrowed a bike to start with off them. They had, like, a full-build demo one from the States or somewhere. And, yeah, they lent me that, which was rad. And, yeah, Ollie Wilkins, for sure, got it all going and introduced me. And, yeah, got on their bikes for a couple of years, so... like through Upgrade, which was rad. Yeah.
And when did that move to being like a pivot direct through like to the US guys?
I think was I Upgrade 2 years, and at the time Matty Dupel ran the pivot like World Cup kind of team with like Kyle Stray and Luke Strobel and Mitch Delfs.
Okay.
And he kind of had like this Kendall Morwood team, or and then that turned into Kona. So yeah, he kind of had the pivot team and the Kona. He was running both at once, and I remember trying to talk to him at the end of the second year maybe he was on pivot, and I was like, dude, is there any chance I could try and get on this? Like, please. And he was trying to sort out a deal for me to be on pivot. And I was like, right, I think I was asking for 10 grand for the whole year. Like, and I was like, I'll ride for you guys. And yeah, da, da, da. And I was trying to get a deal with him. And for some reason, he's like, oh, I can't really get you. I thought it was going to happen. It wasn't. He's like, talk to Chris. And I don't know if Upgrade had put me on contact with Chris Kakalis, the owner of Pivot, or Matty had. So I was kind of talking to Matty, and then I started talking to him, and then Matty was like, hey, I can get you your deal, but it's not with them, it's with someone else. And he's like, oh, and then he told me it was with Evil.
Right.
Because Matty started running the Evil team. He'd like kind of just run all these teams, I think, because he'd worked for SRAM, and he's just a real connected guy, and he's like good at running a team. But by that point, I was talking to Chris, and I just had it in my head that I wanted to ride Pivot. It was DW. It was like an Iron Horse Sunday, which I thought was cool because of Sam Hill.
Yeah.
So I started talking to Chris, and then I was like, hey, what about if I just run the team for you? Which, in hindsight, is insane. I don't even know what I was right. If I read my emails back, they'd be so bad, I bet. They probably aren't still the best now. And yeah, so what was I, 20 years old?
Yeah.
Probably 21. And I remember Chris being like, okay, can you write a full proposal for me? So I wrote one out, and I can't even remember how I wrote it. It was just probably a big email. And I remember the first year I ran it, I was like, I asked Chris for $26,000 to run a World Cup team. Well, hopefully he doesn't mind me saying the number, which I thought was so much money. I was like, I'm going to be rich, like 26K. But don't forget, that's for me, another rider, and a mechanic to fly around the world, three of us. Like, dude, like, you're not going to get anywhere, really. And then I had a few other sponsors on board, like some real cool ones. And I think we got to like 38K or something, the budget was. But yeah, Chris believed in me, dude. I asked him for this. I was like, this is how much we need. And he just said, yeah, right, you can do it.
Fair play.
Here you go. So then I reached out to other sponsors, got a rider on board, Austin Warren. And then the reason I did it, I guess, was that I had offers from a couple other teams even at the time. Like, I had that one from Evil, through Matty. I had maybe Polygon were asking me with Couscous. And there was another one, Saracen and Rose were asking me.
Yeah.
I remember just being like, I just want to keep traveling in a van with my friends. Why would I go on a team if I could just be in a van with my mates? So I was like, I just want to keep doing that. And like, yeah, travel around in a van with my mates. So yeah, I just wanted to do that, I guess, and have the flexibility of doing my own thing maybe.
Yeah.
So all I was trying to do was, that was why I was running a team. I was like, oh, I'm just going to do my own thing so I can still travel in the van, but you're getting paid and it's no different. If I've got a mechanic, I've got a mechanic. So yeah, got that going. Chris was awesome, believed in me, got the other sponsors on board. And I think three quarters of the way through the season, I had to call mum up and be like, mum, I need to borrow some money. We ran out of money. Well, like for the last race, I remember we did some sketchy things to get out of some situations and things when we couldn't afford things and probably didn't eat very well at all at the last couple of races. But yeah, the mechanic that year was awesome. Ben Marks, he actually owns a bike shop near here now. And
yeah,
was Brendan's mechanic this year, but for sure, slightly older than me and wise, and helped out a lot, I bet, with things I don't even realize at the time.
Yeah, you seem to have a good way of like just making stuff work. Like, irrespective of the scale of the challenge or the amount of money available, you'll find a way to solve it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, with my mum, I guess, maybe watching how she's made it work, because like there's always a way to make it work, and worrying or stressing out doesn't help a problem.
Yeah.
Like, you can stress or get angry all you like, but it's not going to help solve a problem. Like, there's no point to it, really. I know it's hard in the situation to realize that, but there is no point being angry or, yeah, I don't know, just make the problem work or whatever. And we've dealt with some good problems over the years. But yeah, Chris believed in us, and here we are, eight years later. I think next year is my 10th year on Pivot, including the upgrade years. So
fair play.
And eight with the team. So,
and so what, like 8 years in, the team, I mean, you can see that the team has grown in like in many ways, in scale or in pit space, in quality of kind of infrastructure around you, in the results, in so many ways. I mean, you must be really proud of that for starters.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see actually. And like, my mum didn't see the truck last year, so she came to Leogan this year and saw it for the first time, like the truck and the pits and like all the right. It's so cool. And like, yeah, I'm pretty proud of it, I guess, for like her, because of what we have come from to have this almost, because it's both of us really, like from where we started and like not knowing anything to like, well, we built this, like, yeah, it's pretty,
it's mad,
with obviously the full support of a lot of sponsors and other people. But yeah, the trust from Chris to like start this and see where it's come from and what we've got now is, yeah, it's been a cool journey, I guess. Yeah, it's rad.
And what, like, what's your philosophy, I guess, for the team? What are you trying to create there?
To just have fun, honestly. Like, we joke this year, it's like, Jesus, some funny memes. I love memes. But like, it honestly just got out of hand. It was like, I just wanted to travel in a van with my mates. And like, we just got carried away. We were like, whoa, this is where it ended up, I guess. Like,
the van got bigger.
Yeah, the van just got bigger, dude. That's all that. I just want to travel with my mates, having fun riding bikes and racing. And it literally has just turned into this. Like, that's all it really still is. Like, yes, we train really hard. Yes, we take it seriously at races. Yes, we represent brands and try and do a really good job on social media and present ourselves well. But honestly, we're just a bunch of people traveling around in a van, a big one, trying to have a good time riding and racing bikes. That's all I ever wanted to do. And we just built into this, like, I guess now quite a big like race team, yeah.
Yeah. Do you get to choose the riders? Do you have like the say?
Yeah, like Chris is real awesome with that, and Pivot and all our sponsors, like I'll kind of go to them with like, hey, I really think this guy's good for us, or we should really get this person, and he'll listen or be like, oh, I'd rather get this person, or like, why do you think we should get this person? And yeah, he's never forced anyone upon me or to not get anyone, or yeah, we've talked to some people before, like US people, and he's like really been pumped on a US rider before because they're a US brand.
Of course.
So you can understand, but otherwise, Chris is unreal, really, like, is so trusting and, like, really behind, I guess, what we try and do and what we've done. I mean, it's hopefully worked so far. Like, we've done pretty some pretty good results. We've come quite far, I know, so.
Does it ever get tough?
Tough in what way?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of responsibility. It's a big team now, and it's a high-profile team.
Yeah, I guess I don't think about it. And sometimes, like, this time of year is probably the hardest time. Like, almost, it's, like, a lot of contracts this year to do and, like, juggling a sponsor versus a rider, trying to pay the rider, but you need the sponsor first, but you need the rider first to get the sponsor.
Yeah,
like it's funny.
And they're your mates as well, I guess.
Yeah, so they're your mates, so that's funny, a funny one. But they're all really cool. Like everyone's got their head screwed on pretty well. But yeah, like some late nights, because you have to, like, I talk to America a lot.
Okay.
Like obviously a lot of our sponsors are there, so you have to stay up late because they don't get into the office until 2 or 3 in the afternoon here.
Yeah.
So you might have to stay up late, but. Don't know, at races now, I got help with like an assistant manager and stuff. But yeah, I'm bad at like, not delegate. I feel like I can delegate now, but I'm bad at like letting things go. I just want to do some stuff. And like, I still drive the truck half the time and still do a lot of the emails or the invoicing or, don't know, I guess, yeah, there's a lot to do, but I'm real bad for thinking I can do it better than people. Like I'll admit that is a huge fault of mine, either not trusting people or just being like, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
You know, like by the time you teach someone else to do it, you could have just done it yourself. But don't know. I definitely think it's a big flaw. I need to let other people do things or tell people to do things more, maybe.
It's a tricky one, yeah. Bit of a control freak then.
Yeah, I guess, for sure. Like I've started this and I guess in a way it's like your baby.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I always just think, I'll just do it. I just give it here.
Do you think it has that extra kind of responsibility and that the... I don't know whether you want to use the word stress, but like the extra work that you have to do. Do you think that's detrimental on your performance over a race weekend, or do you think you can do both?
I think it has been in the past, definitely when we've had like things go wrong or a sprint was broken down. I had to go on that stupid TV show. When that sprint was broken down, I remember being on the Mercedes trying to sort that out every bloody day while we're at races and then trying to hire vans and get those up here and somewhere else. And no one really could have done that because it was my van. And it's hard if it's not your money as well. Like if you're working for someone, you're like, oh, how much is it? $5,000 to pay it? Yeah, I'll pay it. Like, whereas it's my $5,000, I'm shelling out something I know I don't need or whatever.
Yeah.
Like I need to deal with that. So I definitely think it has been bad for my racing at points, but generally no, like dude, we're just trying to have fun and ride bikes. Like if I took it as seriously as some people, I think I'd do worse because I wouldn't be having fun. Like everyone's different in how they race. So
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There is a lot of responsibility, I guess, but I feel like we're getting there, hopefully.
I guess it takes your focus. Like, you don't have time to stress about the race because you're busy doing other stuff.
Yeah, so you maybe it helps. Think about so. Yeah, like the first is a good example. Like the first ever podium I got at Leogang, I remember I crashed in practice, first run, bent my handlebars, and we had rental glue on grips.
Yeah.
So we glued a new set on because we didn't used to put them on the bars first. And we waited, went up to the start hut, waited at the start hut until I could be the last guy down in practice. And my grips still weren't dry, so I had to go down with like moving grips in practice. Had like the worst second run as well because my grips were moving. Crashed in the first run, worst second run. Was like, oh, whatever, I'm just going to do as good as I can do. And then got a podium. So like sometimes, just taking your focus off a bit almost can help you do better.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a weird one.
Pulls the attention away from the stressful nature of racing, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And just... Yeah. Yeah, stress doesn't help either. I don't know. When people say, you're stressed, I'm not really sure. What is that? But I guess I must be. But I don't really know what exactly it means.
Yeah. So if money was no object, unlimited budget, is there any other rider in the pits right now that you'd want to add to your crew?
Yeah, Conor Fearon, for sure. Conor Fearon, he's the man. Like, he's probably one of my best friends, if not on the race circuit. So we always ride together. You'll see a lot of World Cups and stuff. So... He's just the man. He rides flat pedals. He can turn like no other. He's got 6-star. And yeah, I'd love to hang out with him the whole time, ride motorbikes. So yeah, Conor Fearon. I've tried to get him before. I'm not going to lie. Like I would get him in a heartbeat. So yeah, him. Yeah, I'd probably say Connor. I mean, everyone's so cool at Mountain Bike, and it's rad. Like, you'd be hard pushed to not try and buy Lurk Bruni. Like, he's so nice, he's so cool, and he's like so good at racing. Like, yeah, he's got his racecraft down. So he's really cool. But yeah, Connor Fearon. If I could buy anyone, I'd go Connor Fearon.
Okay, yeah, it would be good.
He'd be a good fit. Such a good rider, and I feel like he's going well with the team.
yeah, I reckon. Nice one. And so, 10 years with Pivot. Have you had much involvement in the design and the development of the product over the years?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're so cool. Like Kevin, the main designer there, and then Chris, and then I've had plenty of phone calls with Dave Weagle as well, because obviously they're DW Link. Yeah. So they're really cool. Like, yeah, involving us in that, or being like, hey, what do you think about this? Or is this working? Or they're really good with bikes a lot of the time. They could just be like, hey, here's a bike, ride it. And we'll be like, yeah, it's perfect, or it's good. Or they'll kind of give it and like, see what I say. Or they'll just be like, right, we're doing the 29 and we need loads of help. Like, yeah, we think this, but are we right?
Okay.
Like, the BB was way too low on the start with, so we've brought that up.
Uh-huh.
And they really listened on that. So yeah, colors can be hard. I know designers get that stuff like pumped on that, but I did the World's Bike Behind You in like a sand color, and then the next year they brought out a sand color Fiber 29, so yeah, or 2 years later, whenever it was. So yeah, I feel like I had some input in that without directly telling them to. So yeah,
like a subtle influence.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's a rare company to work with, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's pretty unusual there's not many riders that stay with a brand for 10 years.
Yeah, no, I guess, yeah. I feel like I'm just lucky with that. Like, Chris is really cool. Like, we get on well, I guess, I hope. And yeah, he trusts me with the team. And yeah, everyone there's rad. Like, Rachel, the head of marketing, I've known her for a long time now, and she's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, like, one of the girls that does shipping and helps us with stuff, Mary, she's cool. And then you got, like, Daniel's international sales, he's the man. You go around there, honestly, as a family, there's a guy out there, Kenny, like, on the assembly line. He's the man, dude. Like, I'm not just trying to be nice to them. Honestly, I can just, like, walk into the office tomorrow and just, like, be normal and friends with everyone. It's really cool there, like, just hanging out.
Become, like, family a bit.
Dude, for sure, it's rad. Like, I feel like it's cool as well, because, like, not a big headway. Sometimes people are like, oh, you're this pro, or you're this, or whatever. But no one there, I don't think, thinks of me like that. It's rad. We all just, like, hang out. It's real cool. Like,
nice.
Yeah, there's nowhere I'd ever, like, want to go anywhere else, that's for sure.
Good stuff. And you've had some strong results over the years so far. But I guess, I mean, correct me if you think otherwise, but your standout is probably fifth place at 2016 Worlds Val d'Isère.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had some good results for sure. I feel like this year I threw it away a bit with breaking my hand mid-season, but that Val d'Isère one probably is, like, pretty good. Like, I missed the first day of practice.
Yeah, because you were standing for G, weren't you?
Yeah, so G was going to try and race, didn't. And then by the time he pulled out, I missed the whole first day of practice. So, yeah, to miss a day and then
get a place fit, like that,
yeah,
as well.
I was pretty hyped on that, which is just kind of cool, I guess. Worlds is a funny one, like, with how people attack it. But yeah, I was pretty hyped on that. I guess you don't go on the podium, so maybe it doesn't feel as good. It's weird how much I brushed that one off now you bring that up. But
yeah, because it was, I mean, that was the top 3-4 riders, that was a hell of a pace. Like, everyone in that top five,
yeah,
was pushing on. Like,
yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I don't really know. I guess for me, like, the King of Crankworx, I won that overall thing. That was unreal, because, like, that year I was determined to do it the first year of it, so that feels rad. And then Hardline, dude, I just love Rebel Hardline. It's a sick event. And yeah, I don't know, I really like Hardline. And then yeah, two World Cup podiums. It's fifth. Yeah, my best are fifth. So I'm really trying to beat that. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know which would be my best would be.
Fair play.
That was the question.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just kind of interested in what stands out. Because your results over the years, when you look back, I did like a Roots and Rain search to remind myself, like, quite up and down. Like,
yeah, quite up and down. I used to have like shit products. I had really bad rims 1 year. I got 3 flats at World Cup and snapped a chain in 1 year, all in qualifying.
Oh.
So I missed 4 races, 3 flats and a snap chain. I was like, how is my luck this bad?
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
And then not knowing, dude, like, me and my mum didn't know anything. So I feel like I'm a late bloomer, a lot of it because of how clueless we were. Like,
right,
my bike was terrible setup. I didn't know how to do suspension. I didn't know how to do tire pressures. I should have tried to learn more. But honestly, dude, I was just out there having fun riding a bike. I didn't used to train. So as I'm getting older, I feel like I'm learning, right, you need to train like this. You need to set your bike up. You do need to pay attention to more lines, not just ride practice because it's fun. Like, dude, a lot of the time, even now, I'll get in a habit of just bombing down practice because I'm having too much fun. And I'll forget to honestly, like, shit, I need to try 2 lines. Or maybe I'll try and show off. There'll be a bunch of people in a section I know I'm good at, so I'll just come through real fast. I'm like, I should look at the two lines here. You know, because it's only my mates, the other World Cup riders, but I don't know why, dude, I get carried away. So, yeah, I'm probably one of the older guys to get their first podium.
Yeah.
Like, how old am I now? 28. So I'd have been 26 at my first podium, I think.
Right, okay.
Probably a very old age for your first podium.
Yeah, I suppose so, it is, yeah.
And then, yeah, I've had injuries the last couple seasons where I feel like, right, I'm really about to get there and this is it. I'm going to be on a roll now. I'm going to break out. Like, this year, dude, after I did Andorra, crashed and got 17th. And I was like, dude, that was my race. I was top five there. And then Leger, like, qualified 7th, I think. Was that right? And I just rode, I crashed twice in practice that morning. Just rode so safe in the race and got like 18th or wherever I got. I was like, what are you doing? Came home, had the best training block and was like, right, I'm going out to the next World Cups to be top three.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, got hurt. So, yeah, definitely my fault. But, but it was up and down. And
yeah, like, but the performance, yeah. Like, it was there this season.
This season it was like the most that I ever felt like. Yeah, like one-time practice at Leogang. Cruise quality was like, I just want to qualify because I wasn't protected. Got 15th.
Yeah.
And then tried way too hard in the race, dude. Like, was like, I don't know. I just knew I had it that day. I was like, yeah. I can be the fastest guy.
Well, and you still had the fastest through the Red Bull time
section. Yeah, like one of the times. I knew I was good in there a week and I was winding Lurk up that I was, I was half a second quicker than him. And I think in the race, I was 0.4 quicker than him.
Nice, take that.
Because we timed it in practice and he wouldn't believe me. And then I did it and I was like, yeah. And I had all this gravel in my goggles, but I was determined coming down. I was so winded. Like everyone was like, why has he given up on the live feed? But I was so winded after I got up. I was like, rolling down. And once I got my breath back, I was like, right, I'm going to go again. Like, I always think, never give up. What if everyone crashes?
Yeah,
which they probably won't. But hey, what if everyone crashes? You can still win.
Well, there's been a few pretty standout.
Exactly. So I was like, right, I'm going to go again as soon as I'm not winded, and did. And yeah, like won that section, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I know my speed was there this year. I just idiot and got hurt.
Fair play. So what are your hopes for next year? Like, are you still in it to win it?
Yeah, I want a podium and I want to win. I want to win a World Cup. One day I want to win a World Cup. I feel like I've got the speed now and I feel like I've got like the bike skill. So I just need to like improve my racecraft, I think, and like, don't know, copy whatever Lurk does. And they're pretty good at racecraft. So they're all Frenchies. So yeah, I feel like genuinely I've got the bike skill and I just need to put it all together.
Yeah. And do you think as you've got older, are you getting more focused on the result, like, or not? Maybe not on the result, but like on the process of getting there, like breaking the track down a bit more, thinking a bit more, rather than just hooning it and having a good.
Definitely, dude. Definitely, yeah. Rather than just hooning it, having a good time and hitting sections, I'll be like, sometimes I'll talk to like when we're talking with each other. There's like mini finish lines on tracks, like let's say at Leogang, you go through that stump section as the motorway after.
Yeah.
That you should pretend that's like you're sprinting for a finish line because you see everyone sprint at the finish line. They sprint as hard as they can. But the bit on the track before that motorway is way more important than the last three cranks to make up time for that whole section. So I'll try and be good at being like, right, there's a mini finish line here. There's a mini one there. You got to sprint like that's the finish line. And like little things like that, I think, yeah, like breaking little bits down like that and thinking is definitely helping me.
Yeah.
I hope it is.
Yeah, for sure. And you're always one for looking for a nice gap.
Yeah, a gap. Like, I ride bikes because it's fun. And my favorite part of biking probably is jumps. Like, I've always loved jumps the most. So yeah, if there's a gap to be had, I'll do it. I'll try it at least.
Yeah, the BK Whopper.
I'm pretty stoked I got that one in Andorra. Yeah, the first guy to ever hit that. So
what's going through your head though when you're like, right, I think this is on?
So we've talked, loads of people have talked about that one for ages. And then in track, I was like, dude, why have I not done it? I'm doing this tomorrow. I was like, right, I'll call it first run. And I did roll through it and I pushed back up. But I did do it first run. I hit it. I hit it every single run. So yeah, I pushed back up, cased it a bit. And the next run, I did it perfect. So I don't know. I was just hyped to do it. I was confident. I just felt good on my bike. And I was like, dude, I'm going to do this. And yeah, I just thought I had Andorra on lock.
Fair play.
So I crashed on the easiest part.
And you had a nice little gap at Hardline as well.
Off the rock. I wanted to do two gaps there. Like we did track walk and don't know. I turned up to Hardline really confident. I guess I've done good there in the past. And dude, it's different when you turn up at Leogang or anywhere where you're confident. You just turn up with like this little like buzz about you, and you're like, it's weird when you walk a track. You're almost walking smiling. You know you're like good. It sounds cocky, I guess, and you're like, right, I'm good here, and I'm looking for things to do better. Like the jumps are all fine, whatever. They're a bit scary. We'll hit them. We'll be cool.
Yeah.
And I guess that's probably why I do good there, because a lot of people just focus on the jumps and want to hit those, and I'm like track walking. Like, right, where can I make up time in the track, or where can I be good? And I saw that rock, and I was like, right, if I can gap off that, and then there's this like thing called the credit card slot after it. I was like, gap off the rock and gap that. And I only thought of the rock gap because I wanted to gap the credit card thing,
okay,
which I didn't actually end up doing. It was too gnarly. But yeah, the gap off the rock, I just thought if I hop the stump on the right before and then off it, it'd be quick. And then I did it. And then everyone saw it in my helmet cam from, was it time practice or qualifying or something? And then yeah, everyone else did it the next, well, no, I think Flo Payette did it, Charlie Hatton and G, but it actually took Charlie out, I think. So
right, yeah.
Sorry to him, but yeah, down. I think, yeah, I don't know, just like jumps and gaps.
Do you think it's a bit of a like a mental gain over some of the other riders? Because I went and watched G puzzling that gap a little bit on the morning of.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I think things like that, yeah, I find it fun. And that's like World Cups, I love doing gaps because, yeah, it's fun. Because Andorra was the raddest buzz. When I hit that gap, dude, everyone was talking to me in the pits. And there was this buzz around the pits about this gap. And it would be cool if we had more of that, even not just for me, if someone else was doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think for sure it's a mental gain. And it's just fun, dude. Like, it's a fun to have, like, especially when we go back to tracks like Leogang or Andorra or Fort William year in, year out. Like, if you can find something different and make the track interesting, like, yeah, it's rad. Like, we've almost added a new section to it without, like, finding a new line, you know? So, it makes it exciting. Yeah. It's cool.
And there wasn't many other people hitting that one in Andorra, was there, in the end?
No, I think maybe five of us in the run, but yeah, I think it was definitely quicker, but it looked a lot cooler and the crowd went wild for it. So,
worth it.
For sure,
it.
Cooler, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And Hardline, like you say, went well for you this year. You were, you know, the whole weekend, whenever there was an opportunity for a time run, you were up there, like, you were there to win.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, I wanted to do that Leo game this year. That was the plan, because we searched back. I think the last time someone done it was Stan Blenkinsop at a World Cup. They won time practice, qualifying, and race run.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, him and Schladming in, like, whatever year that was, 2008, maybe?
Wow, that is a long time ago.
I think we tried to look at it this year, and yeah, after I broke my hand, the main goal was like, okay, I'll be good. I'm going to try and get good for Worlds. Then realistically, I was like, dude, that's 5 weeks away. I got a broken hand, or five and a half weeks. Yeah. I was like, that. So I like just wanted to do Worlds, really, apart from the fact to get a sweet custom painted bike from Pivot. I was like, right, if I do that and the next World Cup, I'm only going to do them if my hand's kind of okay. And it's just going to be building for Hardline. Like, it was all for me for Hardline. I really care about Hardline. I think it's a rad event, like Red Bull and everyone put on. And it is a sick race. So I was like, determined, dude. And yeah, after, or even at Snowshoe, like after Worlds, I was like, shit, I kind of did a bit of shit and was a bit worried. Like 34th of everything I had to hold
right
on. Like, I was struggling to ride. Next weekend at Snowshoe, I was like, right, I'll be good first day. And wasn't that good again. And then I did a time run. And I was like, yeah, I'll be good in time practice. And I was like, pretty far back. And I was like, oh, shit. And in the race there, I felt so, so much better race morning. And it was rad at Snowshoe. And I think my top two splits were 12th or something. And I got 24th. And I was like, yeah, I'm on. I got this. And even though it was 24th, dude, I'd built from a 34th to 24th. And I was like, Hardline, I was so confident in Snowshoe, if I'm honest. I was like,
right,
get me home. I cannot wait to be home. Get me on that drive to Hardline. I was so excited to go to Hardline. And yeah, I guess, no, I was more probably nervous about, like, I'd podiumed it every time, so I was like, shit, I better get a podium. But honestly, I was like, I'm going there to win. I'm going to win it. You watch me. Like, not in like, but you, if you don't go with a positive attitude, you're not going to do good. If you go there, yeah, like, oh, I might do shit this week, you're going to do shit. And I went with, I'm going to try and win this thing again. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty up for it, really. I remember hitting the first run down. I was like, my hand was still so sore at Hardline. I was like, suddenly worried when I wasn't before. I was like, turned out, walked the track, and like, you don't need your hand. Then I was like, I've got this. And then did the first run. I was like, oh shit, maybe I don't. And then, yeah, I don't know. It got better, I guess. And yeah, it was pretty, I don't know. Like, some places, you'll see some people just confident there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, Danny Hart goes to Fort William, he's confident. Mm-hmm. Loic Bruni goes to Cairns when it was on the calendar, won every time, didn't he? He's just confident there. People,
yeah,
before you even turn up, you can win the race. Like, you can watch a rugby game. I watched that rugby final the other day between England and South Africa. And if, honestly, from a perspective point, like a spectator's point of view, if you looked at the two teams in the tunnel, I would say England were going to lose. They
okay.
just look different walking onto the field. And I know myself now, when I go to a race, before I've even got there, you've got to have a positive attitude or you're going to do shit. And you know when you've got like an extra positive attitude, like you turn up a track walk and you're hyped and you're like, right, yeah, it's going to be a good week. You're confident. And if you turn up like not, you're probably not going to do good. Yeah, something about Hardline, I just really enjoy the week. We have such a rad bunch of riders and staff that all put on a cool event. I guess just the fun of it. Like, I ride for fun. It is fun.
Yeah.
turn up confident and you do good. So nice.
And it's good money to put into the Supercross fund.
Yeah, exactly. It pretty much pays for that. Yeah, if Red Bull ever pay me, I'm calling them out right now. They haven't paid my prize money yet. But no, dude, it's really, yeah, I was so happy to win that. My mum was there and all my friends and everyone. So yeah, I was pretty stoked to win that one again. Last year I wasn't pissed. I was stoked you won it last year. The year before when it rained for the last three of us and Craig won it, I was pretty mad about that and I got second. So last year, G earned it fair and square. He just smoked us. But yeah, I was pretty determined and pretty happy to win it again this year.
That good
was
work, man.
Definitely a good finish to the season after missing half the races.
For sure. And then other tracks you go well on, Leogang is a place you're...
No idea why. Just nice place, dude. I think the valley's so beautiful and you just enjoy being in a nice place. Yeah. I hate Fort William, if I'm honest. It's just a shithole. And the track's just a rocky walking path down a hill. Like, it's not supposed to be a mountain bike track there. It's the same track every year. The jumps suck. The tracks are like, it's like, the crowd's awesome. The people we get to come watch are awesome. So I try and, like, for the positive vibe thing, is think about that before I go.
Yeah, okay.
And try and get in a good mood and a good vibe about the track, because the crowd's so rad and all these people come out to see us. And like, it's so rad seeing how hyped people are there. But yeah, not a fan. So maybe that's why I like Leogang so much, because normally when we leave Fort William, we go to Europe and we're like excited for Europe at that point.
Yeah, you're
like, being there, we're like, shit, yeah, we're going to the continent to go racing. It's rad. Like, everyone's hyped. Like, Leogang is beautiful, and practice, even though the track's pretty basic, is always a fun time. You can do good trains, the uplift's super quick, the car park's right at the bottom, there's no midges, it's sunny normally for half the day at least. So yeah, good vibe, just like the place.
Yeah, and you go well there. So Worlds 2020?
Well, is it next year or the year after? It is next year.
Yeah.
I had a rumour of a new track. So then I've got to like rehype myself up. But if not, it's all going on the line.
Done. Roll the dice.
We'll put everything on the line for that. Yeah, we'll go all or nothing for it, for sure.
Yeah, if you're going to win one race, that would be...
Yeah, that would be the race to win. So yeah, let's try and do Worlds next year. That'd be a nice one.
Excellent. Good stuff. And then outside of riding and racing, you're kind of fairly well known, I guess, for having an interest in cars and not always the most mainstream and obvious ones. What have you got at the moment?
At the minute, what have I got? I've got a 1957 Land Rover Series 1, which is rad. I actually bought it in New Zealand and shipped that back here.
Sweet.
Because I bought it there really, really cheap, so I was pretty lucky on that. And then I've got Mercedes Sprinter. That's just like, medium wheelbase, whatever one for the team. I bought a Land Rover this year, like a 110 crew cab pickup, which is sick.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Yeah, that's really rad. And then I got a 3-wheeled Reliant Robin, which is out in the driveway, which is sick. So,
what possessed you to buy a Reliant Robin?
Dude, it was honestly, we bought it at World Cup, Valdosol. And I think me and Eddie were on eBay, and they're trying to convince me to get a Mazda RX-7.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the 500 two-stroke of cars. So I was bidding on one of those, and I ended up winning that and bitching out. But I was also bidding on, eBay's fun, dude. I enjoy it. And I bid it on a Reliant Robin. It was like a few hundred quid. And I was like, no way, dude. Like, I'll buy it for that. Why not? And I entered a max bid of 525 and forgot about it. And then after Val d'Isol, I came 17th. My brother rang me up. My older brother was like, hey, congratulations. I was like, oh, thanks. But I didn't do that good. Well, it's only 17th. He's like, no, congrats. I was like, why? It's not that good. He's like, congrats, new car. I was like, no way. He's like, yeah, you just won a Reliant Robin. And I'd forgot that I'd bid on it 4 days before. Dude, and I won it for £505. I was like, well, go. For sure we'll get it. Like, I wasn't even here. And I was like, I paid like a car company to bring it down, like 175 quid to get it delivered or something, which is just because I won it so cheap. And it was just like a joke at the time. And then they put a video up, because we weren't sure what we were going to do with it, whether I'd just get an MOT and sell it and drive it for it. They put a video up of it. And then I flew home a few weeks later and drove it. I was like, dude, I'm never selling this thing.
Wicked. It's I've never driven one. What's it like?
It honestly drives a lot better than people think. Like, yeah, you could roll it, but you'd have to go hard. Like, you'd have to yank the steering wheel around a turn. Like, if you yanked a steering wheel in a normal car that hard, you're going to go off the road.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, it drives pretty well. The only weird thing is, like, down the country roads in England, you get, like, mud in the middle, like on the single lane roads, and the front wheel's on the mud. And if you brake or turn quick, it just slides. So it's really dangerous on, like, braking that. You have to go real slow down my lane. But otherwise, it's sick, dude. It's, like, 4-speed. You're going 20 miles an hour, and it feels like you're doing 50, which is rad. So it's pretty funny. Yeah, I recently had quite a fast car that I got rid of that some people made fun of me for.
What did you have?
Oh, I can't really say.
Interesting.
People can guess that one online somewhere. And this is honestly more fun. Like, I sold the fast car because this one cost me 500 quid. And it's like, when you're doing 50, when you're doing 20, it feels like you're doing 50. The other one, you're doing 100 and it feels like you're going 20.
Yeah,
so
it's crazy.
It was kind of like,
yeah, boring having a fast car, and the Reliant is just like the sickest thing ever. So yeah, and he's getting MOT on it. I haven't been driving it much lately, but every time you take it out, it puts a smile on your face.
Awesome.
It's the sickest car. And now, like, Yakima put the bike racks on the roof for me. It's like actually useful.
Job done.
So yeah, I love that car. That, and then yeah, my Land Rovers. I guess I like Land Rovers, but
is there anything else you'd have? Like
an old Porsche, dude. I want to get an old Porsche next. Yeah. Really old Porsche would be cool.
But they're cool.
They've skyrocketed in price a bit, but that'd be rad. And a Fiat 500. I love Fiat 500. The old ones.
The originals.
Yeah, yeah. I really, really want one of those, but I just don't think I'll use it enough at the minute. So
yeah,
I'll have anywhere that good to store it. So yeah, one day a Fiat 500 and an old one would be rad as cool. Well.
Just need a bigger garage.
Yeah. There's actually a barn out the back where the truck is. Yeah, I own a truck too as well, I guess. An 18 ton truck, which is pretty rad. So yeah, drive that sometimes. I haven't been out in it for a while. Take it down to the shops.
Nice.
But yeah.
Cool. And then you've entered the world of vlogging.
Yeah, well, kind of. We were taking the piss out of people in America, so we just started filming. I called them lifestyle documentaries because they're funny. But I'm going to do some proper ones at some point. I've got a motocross one that I was supposed to build today for the day one of the Supercross even. But yeah, my ones are just kind of, dude, it's real bad because I haven't watched some of them.
Right.
Like, I just literally film clips, throw them together and just like put it up for hopefully people to enjoy if they want.
Cool.
But yeah, I haven't really, I didn't watch one of them, and then someone said there was like a bad word in one bit, and I was like, well, I probably should watch these before I put them up. But yeah, they're pretty funny. I hope people enjoy them, kind of.
Yeah,
but
so watch this space for some more stuff.
Yeah, watch this space. We're going to get going in a bit. Burn a car on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we are going to make some good ones at some point. I bought a camera the other day. It's on the table.
Nice.
So that's what we filmed the first Supercross on with. So yeah, I'm going to get that up any day and then really start doing like a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
so
it'd be good to see the Supercross stuff.
Yeah, I think people will like that. So yeah, should be rad.
Nice one. All right, we'll start wrapping up. We've got our four questions that we end with. First one of those, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what do you think they should spend it on?
£150 to improve their performance on a bike. Like improve the bike's performance or theirs or either or?
Either or, like to get faster in general.
Dude, it's a hard one because it's so specific, isn't it? And it's £150. If they didn't have new tires, put new tires on.
Yeah.
Like for sure new tires. But I guess that's your whole budget gone. But dude, probably new tires because people run crap tires and so did I. New tires and a bike shop, a good bike shop like MB Cyclery, where they actually know what pressures you should be running.
Okay.
Would probably make your life so much better because I used to be terrible for that. So two really good new Maxxis tires.
Yeah. What's your go-to like just for
DHFs, dude?
Okay.
Either front two and DHFs, rear. Yeah. Or around here, shorties. I mean, like on my e-bikes, just two shorties that are sick. So
I bet, yeah, I bet that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, real, real good. Probably, sweet. Yeah.
What kind of pressures do you run then? Because what do you weigh? You're not a heavy guy.
78 kilos. Probably fat. Okay. I mean, I had a few too many beers lately. But I'd run like 20, between like 23 and 25 in the front max.
Yeah.
And in the rear, like 28, 30.
Okay.
So yeah,
yeah,
pretty stock really.
And you're probably a bit heavier on kit than your average rider. You're hitting things harder and faster.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, most people should be pretty fine with that. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. If you could wind back the clock, sit down with yourself at the age of 16, what advice would you give him?
Whoa.
Deep.
Wow, dude, I've done some dumb things when I think about it. You have to be like, I always think when you like watch business saying businessmen are quite cutthroat or whatever. And like, you kind of have to be that way with some things in life if you want to get shit done.
Right.
But I think I could just be nicer.
Okay.
If I'm honest, like maybe not be such a dick with some things or like be a nicer guy in general would probably be what I would say. That's like either to my mum or anyone. Like,
yeah,
like when you look back at some things and you're like, well, fuck, why was I such a dick with that? Or yeah, be nicer, I think, to people like that have helped me out maybe.
What is it that makes you be a dick? Like what drives you into that mode? Because the little time I've spent with you, I would even say you're like, pretty friendly.
Okay, when I'm drunk, I can be a dick for sure.
We all can.
Yeah, that probably. And just, yeah, just thinking of others more, like rather than just being so like, I need to do this, I'm getting this done. Or like, I want to do this, so I'm going to do it. Yeah, maybe think of others more. And,
okay.
Yeah, but at 16, like some things you've got to be a dick and you have to get shit done. Like,
yeah.
Like if you need to do this to get it done, you do. Or you need to like tell someone last minute something because you need to do something else. You do, like, you have to do something's kind of bad or like not fair for everyone, but be nicer.
Yeah. Okay. Fair play. If you could have a coaching session with anybody, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
James Stewart, How to Hit Whoops. I'm going to say.
Feels pretty relevant.
Yeah,
right now.
James Stewart, because he's so cool. And like, it'd be I'm tossed up between him and McGrath, but hopefully McGrath's going to happen. Like, I think we've already got him lined up. So if we're adding someone, because McGrath's the man, like, it would be him or him I would have asked for.
Yeah.
Because just motocross in general, because that's what I think so fun at the minute, because I'm way, way worse at it and quite shit at it comparison. Yeah, probably James Stewart. Whoops, dude. Like, brother, I need some help.
Yeah, if you're listening,
yeah,
get in touch.
Help me out, yeah.
Cool. And what about on the mountain bike side? Is there anyone that you're like, oh, I wish I could do that like they can?
Oh, geez, who's amazing at stuff? What, so they give me a coaching session?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm too much of a rookie at mountain bikes. Like, no stuff. I think like new age kids almost. Danny Mac, dude. I want Danny Mac to teach me how to do the backwards stoppy thing.
Yeah,
I want him. You know where they roll backwards on it? Like, can you just teach me to do that for ages? Because racing, I don't think it's my riding that's holding me up. I think it's me not applying myself well enough or having good enough racecraft. But I think you need to teach yourself your own racecraft almost. So yeah, Danny Mac, and I want to learn how to backwards stoppy.
Nice. That, yeah, that would be impressive. Yeah. Cool. All right, last question. What is something that you do every day that you think benefits you?
Benefits me? What do I do every day? Apart from the obvious ones, like do work. Like send emails obviously benefits me probably. What do I do every day that benefits me?
Got any like rituals or anything that you kind of...
I think I'm really good at, like, personally, I know you're saying now I'm really good, not in a cocky way, but not... either trying to not get annoyed or be like, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I think the best thing is telling myself it doesn't matter. Like most things that people get annoyed about or stressed about in life don't matter. Like it matters, but it doesn't. Like it's hard to say it and maybe you sound arrogant or like a dick, but most things don't actually matter. If someone calls me an idiot to my face, it doesn't actually matter.
Mm.
Nothing changes in my life.
Yeah.
I don't have less money because of it. My bike gears don't now not work. Like it doesn't actually change anything. If someone spat on me, okay, it's annoying, like I've got spit on me, but it doesn't actually change anything. If someone cuts you off in a car, yeah, it's annoying and I might call them an idiot, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
there's so many things in life that we all get annoyed at that don't matter. Like even if you lost £100 today, let's say you've got £100, you'd be annoyed, but it doesn't actually hopefully matter. Or
yeah,
like you'll still survive, you know, or yeah.
You'll find a way.
You'll find a way, dude. Like, right, I've lost that £100. I need to go find another way to make it. Or like, now I have to do a double shift because I've got to pay my rent, like, which could be a thing for sure. But it doesn't actually matter. Like, as long as it doesn't kill you.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we're, yeah. You learn that. I think a lot about, like, especially lately with Geordie and everything. It's crazy. And Stevie and Kelly. Like, when I bought the stupid car I bought, it was like, well, okay, I'm spending money, but it doesn't actually matter. Like whatever, you know, like you could die tomorrow. Like a lot of things that we worry about, it doesn't matter. I think I tell myself that a lot and it like makes me real happy sometimes. And you're like, oh, that's so annoying or that sucks. Or yeah, actually, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Helps you live a happier life.
Yeah, I think it does a lot and you can get more done.
True.
Hopefully more work done.
Yeah, less worrying.
Yeah.
Cool.
Worry less.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good way to end it.
Yeah.
Wicked.
I hope so.
Nice one. Well, if people want to find out a bit more about you, where should they be heading?
Instagram, I guess. I quite enjoy Instagram, so I try to put a lot of stuff up there. I really enjoy creating new cool things to hopefully get people hyped.
And is it just at Bernard Kerr?
At Bernard_Kerr.
Got it.
And then YouTube, hopefully. We're going to get that going real good. So yeah, YouTube, which will be called Bernard Kerr. And then I have a Facebook page that's just the Instagram stuff. But yeah, I guess just YouTube and Instagram and
cool.
Yeah,
we'll put some links in the show notes so people can find all of that stuff.
Yeah, and hopefully didn't sound like too much of a dick on this.
All good. All good. So yeah, we'll get that sorted for you. So we wish you all the best for Anaheim 1. It's a very cool project.
Thank you very much. Well. Yes, I'm excited too. So yeah, just need to get going on some more work.
Yeah, and all the best for next season.
Thank you very much.
Nice one. Cheers, dude.
Cheers.
All right, that's it for this episode with Bernard. I hope you've enjoyed listening. A massive thanks to Miss Spent Summers for supporting this episode of the podcast. If you want to be in with a chance of winning a copy of this year's Hurley Burley and World Stage books for you and a friend, then head to @HurleyBurleyBook on Instagram and find the post about this episode. Comment on that post, tag the friend that you want to win with you, and the guys from Misspent Summers will pick one of you soon. If you're not lucky enough to win, then you can buy yourself a copy of any of the Misspent Summers awesome books over at MisspentSummers.com. All the links you need are in the show notes and on our website, downtimepodcast.com. If you've got a couple of minutes, then please leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the podcast. It makes a massive difference and helps people find the show. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so that you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then share the love at downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, that's it. We've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.